My name is Bill Threlkell, and if you can't pronounce it, I can understand that. I asked my grandmother when she was 82, I said, "Grandma, how do we pronounce this name?" And she said she wasn't sure. So, I mean, don't hold me for that. But I found out around the world people can say Bill. It comes out Bill and Bill, but it's close. So you can say that. And depending on your age, it might be Uncle Bill. Now that I'm a part of the Over the Hill gang, that either one that you're comfortable with is fine. This is Linda Dunn. Linda has spent some time in Ghana as well as elsewhere, but for the purposes we have this morning, her experiences in Ghana, I'm counting her as an expert. You know, when you've done a thing and done it well and had the experience, then you turn out to be the expert. So a little later this morning, you know what an expert is.
Well, see, I
should have qualified that. See, I brought my briefcase, and that's what an expert is, somebody with a briefcase more than 10 miles from home. So I make it a point to carry it. No, I'm teasing. But the one I had laid on me about it being an expert one day is they said, "Well, you need to analyze the term X as has been, and spurt is a drip under pressure." Yeah, I think I qualify for that. But, you know, Linda really is a true expert because she spent time in Ghana, and we'd like to call on her a little later to give some of her experiences and some of the knowledge she's gained just to share it with us. And you feel free now to ask her and, of course, ask me any questions you'd like. We won't guarantee the answers, but we'll guarantee that we'll listen to the questions. Okay, the title, Opportunities to Serve, and I've added the word overseas. Now, if this is not the one that you had in mind, this is bailout time. Otherwise, I'll lock the door and you can't leave. No, that's not really true. I think the idea of overseas and serving and being involved with people, it's a broad-based thing. As we tend to forget the idea, we think foreigners are always those who come over here. But if you've ever been overseas, did you feel very much like a foreigner when you first got off the airplane at Accra? And you didn't go to the Accra.
Where did?
You did.
But I think maybe when I got off in Nairobi.
In Nairobi, that was the beginning of the feeling. What made you feel like you were the foreigner?
Little children would stare at me.
Well, there's a lot of things that contribute to this. See, and people coming over here go through some of those same emotions. A fellow came over from Europe, from one of the old countries. He didn't speak English. He had a friend over here that had gotten a job and was sponsoring him. So he came over, and his friend met him at the airport and got him a room to stay in, helped him to buy some groceries, took him down and got him the job, showed him what to do on working the machine, but the man still couldn't speak any English. Well, he could fix his breakfast and he could fix his supper, but he was going hungry for lunch. So he asked his friend, said, "I'd like to order something in that restaurant over there." He said, "Well, what would you like?" Well, he told him, and he said, "The way you order that is you say apple pie and coffee." So he practiced that apple pie and coffee. Nervous little guy. So he worked on it 100 times, he said it. He went over there, climbed up on the stool, and held on the counter. The waitress said, "What do you have?" And he says, "Apple pie and coffee." She put it down. Boy, that was super. That went on for about 6 weeks, but that got old. So he asked his friend, he said, "Well, I'd like to order something else." And he described what he wanted. He said, "That's called ham sandwich." So he practiced that ham sandwich. So he climbs up on the stool. He grabs on. She comes, says, "What do you have?" And he said, "Ham sandwich." She said, "White whole wheat or rye?" He said, "Apple pie and coffee." Then there was a fellow that went down to Mexico for 5 years, and he came back, and his friend said, I guess you really got good at the Spanish language." He said, "No, I didn't learn the language. I just learned the accent." So you got language, you got food problems, you know. Then there's a guy that thinks he's made it a little better. Another fellow went to Mexico for 4 or 5 years, and they asked him the same question. Said, "I guess you're really good with this language." He said, "Well, important conversational words." He said, "Well, buenos dias, señor. ¿Cómo está usted?" He said, "Taco." So, important conversational terms. So if any of you decide to work or serve overseas, you can go through the language problems, you can go through the food problems. you can go through the feeling of being a foreigner. It's kind of prominent. And if you say, well, it won't happen to me, you've probably made a mistake. It likely is going to happen to you. Everyone that I know who's ever done that has experienced some type of adjustment problems. Well, to look at the subject today, I thought we'd spend a few minutes to look at two categories, maybe long-term and short-term. Try to make a few distinctions there. Then there's various capacities that you could serve in. And there's a lot of mission groups that you could do it with. I've got a few, a handout with several listed on it, and it's highly prejudiced. It's my personal list. The five that I find that I really like, I've spent time with most of these people one way or another, so I feel kind of close to them. And in addition, I've got this book. It's got hundreds and hundreds in there in the back. So if it wasn't your favorite one and you'd like to know more about it, the last section back here, they're alphabetical. So you can look up from Africa, Inland Mission, down through Wycliffe Bible Translators, and you can find out lots of information about it. And I'll linger after we've finished, and if you'd like to look at that, you're welcome. Just a little bit about some of the requirements for serving overseas. That would probably be interesting for you. And then I'd like to call on Linda then to share some of her experiences, some of the things she's learned, just for our own edification. And again, feel free now to interact, ask questions, or if you disagree, that's all right. I usually treat a disagreement with a great big smile. And you see, that's probably not going to offend me or upset me, because I've been challenged by lots of people over the years. And then I would like to finish the time this morning discussing the Missionary Associates Program, which is really a thing that is dear to my heart, because that's my responsibility with the Navigators. I'm responsible for this tent-making missionary effort in which you use your profession to get a visa and a job, and the job then helps you with your support. Basically, a self-supporting missionary. And we've got some delightful women that are serving overseas, and they vary in age from their mid-20s up to about 60. That's about the oldest we have now. But, we're considered even older than that. One fellow said, well, do the Navigators take older people? I said, how old did you have in mind? And they said, well, 80. I said, well, if he looks anything like Moses, we'll take him anyway. You know, Moses was 80 when he started the big trek. So, you know, there's always opportunities. Well, that's the approach we'd like to take. The concept then of trying to categorize missionaries, one of the things that I've seen in a lot of publications is long-term versus short-term. I think that's a little confusing. Long-term to me implies that you're going to do this the rest of your life, and that may not be true. Most mission groups today say something like more than 2 years. Some would define it as more than 4 years. In other words, 4-year term overseas and a 1 year back as furlough, giving you a 5-year period, and they do things in 5-year increments. Well, that's one way to approach it. Others feel that really you need a lifetime involvement, particularly if there's language to be learned and that type of a thing. And the assumptions are made that when you sign on with them, that's it. I mean, you're aboard to the rapture. Well, that really is a long-term assignment. Then we have more of a short-term, 2 years or less. People say that the Missionary Associates Program is a short-term. Now, I never used the word, and I'm the one who wrote the paper, and I never put that in there. A better term is indefinite, meaning you can stay as long as you and the Lord are in agreement about this matter. And, of course, our country leader, we'd like him to be in agreement, too, if you're going to be in a given nation serving with us. We would like him to be in agreement. But there's no reason why you can't stay indefinitely. But normally the short term, so I'm saying indefinite means there's something in the middle. And then there's the short term, and that varies everything from probably a couple of weeks up to 2 years. A lot of mission groups have a few weeks that you can serve during the summer. A Wycliffe has had a situation where you could go to their stations for 3-month periods. Then other mission groups will have a 1-year service. And some have a 2-year service, and they normally count it up to that point as being short-term. I don't know that I'd feel obliged in any of that. Time to me is, Lord, how long would you have me stay? And as far as I'm concerned, if you get over there and the Lord makes it clear you made a mistake, all you have to do with the Missionary Associates Program is write me a letter so I change my mind. I want it to be right between you and God. I saw a little sign on a fellow's desk one day. He said, "Man, you have waited too long to agree with me. I've changed my mind." So you do have the option to change your mind. I think that there are a lot of capacities. If you did it long term or short term, there's a wide range of capacities you can serve in. I've got I copied this out of the missions handbook. It's called Opportunities to Serve, and it gives some broad headings. It's under these headings, for example, under education. Goodness, what can be included under education? That's a broad term. I mean, most anything you could think of that you could teach would probably be under that heading. But I thought you might find this interesting just to get a summary. The way the mission handbook broke this out and organized it, that gave functional ministries, meaning the things that you do. What are the prime objectives of that type of ministry? Now, let's assume that all of them are probably going to have some evangelism included and probably some type of growth functions. That may not be true, but let's say that most of them are that way. So if you put something else in there like medicine, in most cases, that's in addition to some other type of spiritual ministry. Now, the church planting and establishing, then you see number of agencies. There are 254 major mission agencies that are committed to that. In my estimation today, I see church planting has become a very vogue term. It's very much in favor. Like 10, 12 years ago, the word disciple or disciple making, that became prominent after having been dormant for a long time. And I really am in favor of church planting. But the Great Commission never said to go and plant churches. There's a fallacy in thinking. It's a trap in my mind. I talked to one fellow that used the term four or five times on me, and I said, "I'm in favor of church planting. In fact, we're members of a church, and we go to church, and I've taught Sunday school and directed choirs and all that. I'm very much in favor of it, but that's not the Great Commission." I said, you realize you can go and plant a dead church? If your objective is simply to plant a church, then you can look at an organization pattern. As soon as you get some people who are willing to band together and elect some officers, you can have a church. You can get a denominational book, a church order, and structure one, but you may not have any disciples. And you may never have a disciple maker. How do I know that? Because that's my history. Up till I was 35, the churches I was involved in were very much dead. So even in church planting, you see, there should be another objective behind it. My contention is if you're committed to making disciples and multiplying them, you'll have to plant a church at some point in time. And then you'll have a church that's alive, that's growing, and that's reproducing. And from there, it's logical to expect constant growth as we reproduce and multiply. But if you start the other way and miss the Great Commission, I think you're in trouble. But church planting is a very large thing, and you can see from the number of groups there how many are directly committed to that. Of course, evangelism, personal and small group evangelism, the navigators would fall in that heading. We're not under the planting of churches. Mass evangelism, a lesser number, but still quite a few. Literature distribution, and there are quite a number of groups that's basically the key thing they do. They give out literature and then they answer that by mail. In some places, there are not many alternatives. And they're very closed places if you can get a little literature in. I'm amazed, for example, friends of mine who've done some of this in North Africa. And the literature was very quietly given out, and then there were addresses given, and they've established a correspondence follow-up program. Education, teaching of all kinds. When we say medicine, that was anything in the medical field. It's got medical, dental, and public health, but that would be therapists and radiologists and so forth. Christian broadcasting is really a thing that excites my heart today. The Far East Broadcasting Company, for example, operating in Asia. So we have several transmitters out there. I forget the wattage output, but it's enormous. And it's low frequency, so it'll follow the curvature of the earth. And they're broadcasting into China. And they're getting thousands of letters back from Chinese who listen. They're even dictating scriptures. They'll have a period of time set up, so they dictate it in Mandarin Chinese, and the people who are listening secretly are writing down the scriptures a little bit at a time. Boy, that's exciting to see. A so-called totally closed place may not be really that closed when you get down to it. Now, broadcasting, any of the skills that go with that, scripting, analysis, research, writing, typing, I mean, there's just lots of possibilities to serve. Of course, education would include theological education. nurture and support of national churches, that primarily to me is the teaching and advice and counsel, being there to help the nationals to continue to do the thing that they know. For example, the Sudan Interior Mission would do many of the above. And one thing they are committed is to helping the nationals continue to grow and develop. In fact, evangelical churches of West Africa have been established across. I guess they have that in Ghana too. And the missionaries there actually work for the Africans, the Anglo missionaries. It's an African church, and they're the leaders. So that's nurturing and helping them. I really like that approach, supportive nationals. Then there's some general activities. Broad-based education, evangelism. We're saying some of the other things. I think the difference now, when we get down to humanitarian, aid and relief, food, health items, where you come in primarily to save the people's life physically, and then to do a little Christian ministry after that. Support activities, that could be almost anything, from packing items in crates and shipping, flying airplanes, radio, repair, whatever. Media would tie in again probably with broadcasting, but could include TV as well as radio. So that just gives you some bit of a clue then of some opportunities that there are to serve overseas. Now, where in the world can you do all of this? Well, this mission handbook lists 192 countries. So that's pretty broad-based. The Lord said the whole world. Well, you're bound to hit that one. I mean, you can close your eyes and fire. I mean, you're going to hit that target. He said it's all the world. In fact, he said to the uttermost part of the world. Have you been to the uttermost yet? I've been there several times. I got off an airplane in Abu Dhabi, part of the United Arab Emirates. I looked back toward the town, and there were people and buildings. Very few trees. I mean, it was blistering hot in this desert country. I turned around and looked behind me. As far as I could see, there was nothing. Then a friend and I got in a little Peugeot station wagon and took a trip out across the desert to a little oasis out there, and I knew I'd found it. Boy, I said, this is it. When he said the uttermost, this is heartland. Everything else is fringe area. I kind of felt that way in Kano and northern Nigeria. Yeah, that's desolate country up there. Wow. Yeah, overwhelming. Talk about feeling like a foreigner. There were black faces everywhere. There were almost no whites. I was totally unthreatening. But they were threatening me significantly. I got off the airplane and there were some young Nigerian army troops out there making sure we got from the airplane into the waiting room, and they had tribal scars. And they were holding AK-47 Kalashnikov, Russian submachine guns. And an old U.S. military type. I never did like that weapon. I don't like Russian helmets. I don't like Russian weapons. I don't like Russian language inscribed on anything. I looked around and I said, Lord, it's you and me. I don't see anybody else. You ever had that feeling? But I remember that we made the majority because God's in control. And then I said something like, now, Lord, you promised to take care of me. I think the promises of God are so essential in any type of overseas service. Do you ever have opportunity to call on the promises? Mm-hmm. Was there any one or two that came immediately to your mind?
On promises?
Yeah.
I think the with principle, just all the verses that said, and I've lived alone most of my years in Africa, and so I just asked the Lord to be my husband.
Fantastic.
Be with me throughout.
Is that a good plan for the U.S.? That's a good plan for everywhere, isn't it? It's awful easy to forget it there. I think it has to come to your attention when you get overseas. Certainly did mine. I did things like, I'll never leave you nor forsake you. I'll hold you in my victorious right hand. I'll teach you and instruct you in the way that you should go. I'll guide you with my eye. Words in my mouth and meditations in my heart. You know, there's a long, it just keeps on flowing. And that's exciting to just review them. And occasionally, you really need to do that. Of the 192 nations that are listed in this handbook, there's actually some type of a Christian missionary involvement in all of those nations except 8. I don't know if you found that interesting. I did. The head of the list is Albania. Now, they don't even like Albanians, best I can tell. I mean, that is really a closed country. That may be the most closed country that I know of in the world. They don't want Russians in there. They don't want anybody in there. They do allow, there's one or two language ethnic groups that they will let come in and out under very selected conditions. So I think plan A for us is to let's raise up some of those. Rather than call them by name, we'll let them remain secret. But we found out that there's one or two of the groups that can get in. So not an American, absolutely not. But another one is Bulgaria. However, we do have them. There are missionaries in Bulgaria. The book said that there aren't. That means that there are none of these several hundred that are officially covered. Now, how do you think we can get into Bulgaria?
Well, the Christian Underground is working, isn't
it? Yeah, it certainly is. How can we get some help in there to them? We can send them as tent-making missionaries. We can send them as students. There are some other ways to do it. And they won't be classified then as a, quote, full-time missionary. But see, what is full-time missionary? I think we all should be full-time in service for the Lord. In other words, if we work at a job, okay, then wherever we are, we're full-time. Our attitudes, our behavior, our heart response, our witness, and the way we work, that ought to be noticeable. People should say things like, boy, look at that person. They really are a good worker. That was full-time. Bhutan, East Germany. I don't know where that is. Did you notice I went by that in a hurry? I didn't do my homework on that one. Where in the world is Bhutan? You might look that up. I don't know if it's in there for sure. East Germany, Gibraltar. I was surprised with Gibraltar. We can get a mission group in there if we want. Mauritania. Syria. Now, we can get people in Syria. In fact, we can get people in almost every place I've mentioned except Albania. Syria. That Syria was number 7. And then there was an island called Turks and Caicos, C-A-I-C-O-S Island. And I'm not sure where that is either.
But even on the name of their church, that's
global island. Well, that particular group doesn't have, it's listed in there, but they don't have an official mission group that's in there. There may be some other people. Well, I thought 192, and if you count these 8, if you subtract them out, then that's still a goodly number. So where would you like to go? People have asked me in the Missionary Associates program, well, where are you? And I said, well, we're in 31 nations with MAs, but we're in another 20 nations with staff that are, we want to go with staff where we don't have MAs yet. And then you got the rest of the world. If you got some good way to get in, you might persuade the navigators to let's work on your frequency if you got some good way to do that. So there are quite a number of opportunities. Now, who can you go with? I think that this book has got lots of agencies. I thought what we'd do is take a few minutes and look over some very prominent ones. And it takes in many of the areas of the world. That was another thing that I wanted to give this a sample of some agencies in various continents. Sudan Interior Mission. They've got a lot of NAVs in that group. NAVs and former NAVs. In fact, the regional director, one of the regional directors for SIM has his headquarters, local telephone call from here. It's just up the side of the mountain at Divide. Bud Acord, some of you may know Bud and Dot. But he was led to Christ by NAV when he was a teenager. And Dawson Trotman discipled him. So we've got that kind of a tie with SIM and have had over the years. Some of the early missionary associates went both as a missionary associate with the NAVs and as a SIM affiliate. That was a title that they gave for the tent making effort. Yes, ma'am. It's a regional office. Mm-hmm. I say an office. It's Bud Acord and his wife. Yeah, and they keep up. I think she helps with the secretarial work. Yeah, they spent time in Aden back down on the Saudi Arabian Peninsula. They're very experienced missionaries. Then that was with another mission group, and then they've been with SIM for I don't know how many years. If you would like to call them, if you have an interest in SIM, you'd be welcome to do it. You could call right here from the Glen. I didn't bring his telephone number with me, but you can dial 221 to get in my office, and whoever answers, you can tell them to look at my little flip a dial system thing on my desk under A for Acord, and I've got his number in there. But that's an international, interdenominational sending agency of evangelical tradition. They establish churches, assist national churches, engage in evangelism, education, literature, medicine, linguistics, translation, literacy, broadcasting, agriculture, and community development. They're in 9 nations. I believe that's 10 now. This, the book, is a couple of years old here. But they are, what else is left there? I mean, that's most of the functions we looked at earlier. They didn't say in here, they're engaged in, they've got some airplanes, they've got pilots and that type of thing. I keep bringing that up and I don't need to. I was a pilot many years ago in the Air Force, so I tend to think in those terms. Excuse me, my language as well as my mind drifts back in there from time to time. But the Lord loves me anyway. Let's press on. Africa Inland Mission. They were very prominent in Kenya. You went to Kenya first before you went to Ghana? Did you have any contacts with AIM there?
Yes, the navigator office was 2 floors above the AIM office. And again, similar to ECWA, or the Evangelicals of West Africa, AIM missionaries are with the AIM Church, the African Inland Church. So they're serving the national right now.
That's interesting. Now, when you were in... when you were in Ghana, did you relate to any SIM missionaries there?
Many.
You probably, did you find much difference in AIM and SIM as far as the people and attitudes? Or?
No. They're just people that I personally have learned to really respect. Men and women who really pray and believe God.
Did you run into any supermen or women, superwomen, while you were there with them?
Just ordinary folks.
Yeah. There you go. I think that's key if you're thinking about service, to squelch the idea that Superman, Superwoman. That's baloney, first off. I don't know where you'd find any in the first place. And if you did, they may be too high profile for that work.
They don't stay.
They don't fit. I like the way Sandy talked about the NAVs, Lauren Sandy, some years ago. He said, we're not looking for Supermen. What we want is plotters. Plotters. P-L-O-D-D-E-R-S. Plotters. Those people who will make a commitment to God and hang in there. You know? Make the commitment and hang in. Stay with it. I found out the hard way that the term we used back in Tennessee was barn burner. You know, you become a person that's a barn burner, he comes on too strong, too fast. And he frequently doesn't make it. Person that is very high profile, sort of feels that they're supermanish, can learn lots of verses in a hurry and do this other in a hurry and do the other in a hurry. Looks more like the American management model, the Akunson O'Donnell and those kind of guys. Peter Drucker described him, you know, he'll keep going until he gets beyond his point of capacity, and then that's, you know, it's a wing over and he's probably going to crash. But I found out that they remind me of a Minuteman missile down at Cape Canaveral. If you ever see any pictures of the launch of a Minuteman, first thing you see is a little smoke ring. And then the next thing, it pops up out of there and it's heading back out down over the Atlantic Ocean. All that happens real fast. But if the second stage doesn't separate and ignite, guess what happens? The whole thing falls in the Atlantic Ocean. You know, we got to go out there with ships and submarines and try to find it and pull it up before the Russians get it. Because they got their fishing trawlers out there tracking it. Yeah, it's really amazing how big those trawlers are. Huge antennas for locating the fish. But we only had a 3-mile limit. If I was ever unsure when the launch time was, if I get a pair of field glasses from the top of headquarters and see, count the Russian trawlers, then I know we're in the final count. They had a way of knowing when we were going to launch. How do I get off on that? Africa Inland Mission, and they do a parallel work. International Interdenominational Sending Agency, Evangelism, Church Planning, Church Growth, Education, Medicine, Personal Witness, they're involved in aviation. But they're broad-based. I would say that probably SIM is more, they have more visionaries. They cover more real estate as far as area, and they do more functions. But they're parallel in a lot of ways. Well, those are two very prominent ones for Africa. They will take both long-term and short-term missionaries. They even are looking for people like house mothers and families to come over and help them in school involvement, as well as professionals in almost any realm you can think of. What are some of the realms you've seen that some of the women there do?
Well, just as you were sharing, I was thinking retired people. They'll come out and the woman will be the host of, let's say, their mission house or their conference grounds, and then the man might well be the mechanic to help fix some of the staff cars. And I have really seen some fulfilled women with their husbands or on their own in their 60s and 70s serving. And they have such a strong walk with God, they're really an asset to the younger staff people.
I think there's another advantage. You mentioned older, and we don't want to harp on that, but I think there, it gets too personal. Skip told me one day, he said, "Bill, I'm not sure you can live, be as old as you look." Well, you know, the Lord loves me anyway. Because I was part of the Over the Hill gang when I got started. I didn't become a Christian until I was 35. So whatever I've got to do, I do have to hurry a little bit if I'm going to get it done. Well, there's some advantages to being older in Africa. How would you describe the attitudes and feelings of Africans to white hair?
I think it would be like the States years ago. We really respected our grandparents and great aunts and great uncles, where you would kind of in awe sit at their feet and listen to them. And that's changed, of course, which is sad. There's no respect, I don't think, or little respect for older people that are often tucked in these nursing homes. And I've met a lot of people in nursing homes that their own daughters and sons won't visit them. People from churches that are helping to encourage them. Whereas in Africa, there are no nursing homes to kind of tuck them away because they're part of the family until they die. And there's great respect for them, and they will listen to what they have to say. So when we have Navigator staff people, if they come, Jim Downing with his gray hair and Marina with her white hair, they have a tremendous ministry from high schooler on up because they'll sit at their feet and listen and really learn from them.
I had some first-hand experience with that. I had some Africans seek me out, wait to the side, and the point of starting the conversation was that it was something like, it really does stir my heart to see a man of your maturity being willing to come to Africa to help us. In other words, I had an instant hearing simply because what hair I have is gray. I found that to be true to some extent in the Middle East. Hardcore Muslims have a respect for elders. I walked down the street talking with some Arab men. They wouldn't even let me carry my briefcase. It was culturally unacceptable for an older man to carry something if he's with a young man. Twice they took it away from me, and I did it before I got the message. Some of us, you know, are a little hard to get the message. You had to have a hammer several times. It'll sink in. But there are advantages. Now, Asia is very much like that. They revere. They have a deep respect for elders. Is that a good biblical base? You know what it says in Leviticus? Show respect for the elderly. Rise in the presence of the aged. My dad taught that to me. You were talking about as it was years ago. Of course, I can remember back to 19-aught, whatever the year was. Not quite. But my dad taught that to me. He said, "Son, I want you to show respect for your elders." And that was across the board. You thought I was from Maine all this time? No, you didn't. I'm really not from Maine. My dad grew up in the cotton fields of Georgia. I was born and brought up in Florida. But my mother, all the relatives were from Georgia. But my dad taught that to me about people. See, even back in the 40s, when there was a strong race tension in that area, my dad taught me that elders are elders, so it doesn't matter what the color is. I said, "Ma'am and sir," to black elders as well as I did. I said, "How old is you have in mind?" My dad said, "Well, you know Lucy Long?" "Yes, sir." He said, "Son, I say ma'am to her." I just thought that was a polite thing. I was taught it's a mark of respect. And I still believe that. I say that to younger people sometimes. They don't understand it. But that's still, I've explained it more than once. I say, "Well, you need to know that that's my effort to show respect." Well, they show respect, don't they? Will they, what if you have something that you want to say, will they listen to it? Invariably. There may be very few exceptions. If you spent years in Africa, there'd be very few exceptions. If you're an older person, there'd be few exceptions, but what the people would listen to you. simply because you are that way. I think that's a tremendous tradition, and let's capitalize on it. Now, there's certain jobs that bring respect. Did you find some jobs that brought added respect that Africans would just listen to because you do the job?
Maybe more the technologically advanced because it was new to them.
How did they treat teachers there?
Well, because I've been in Kenya and Ghana, they're both former British colonies. We really followed the quite rigid high standard of the educational program from Britain. So often, responding to a teacher's question, they do stand. And when the teacher comes in, like my roommate taught mathematics, and she would come in and they would all run.
But they did respect teachers, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah. You get a lot more respect that Rodney Dangerfield could probably get a little respect over there if he was teaching. Teachers get respect. Well, there are a lot of more we could say. Let's move on to Central America. One of the there's a number of agencies. Incidentally, SIM is now operating in two or three countries in Latin America. They've sort of merged with another mission group that was primarily in Latin America. But Central America Mission, CAM International, a non-denominational sending agency, evangelical and fundamentalist traditions, plants churches engaged in theological education, broadcasting, and evangelism. As I recall, George Sanchez was in there broadcasting as a missionary many years ago. Yeah. Yeah, I believe that's right. Mm-hmm. George is truly bilingual and bicultural. He is Mr. Cool all the way around. He can handle that. And then there's Overseas Missionary Fellowship. That's really as the offshoot of the old China Inland Mission. Hudson Taylor, in fact, James Hudson Taylor III, I think, is now one of the key directors in that organization. I had the privilege to meet him a couple of years ago. Right out of the same tradition of his grandfather, I'll tell you. I sat back much in awe with the man, with his bearing, with his attitude, with his prayerfulness, with his knowledge of the Word, with his personal commitment, with his communication capabilities. Truly an outstanding man. God is blessing him and blessing OMF. They are scattered in quite a number of countries, largely in Asia, but they're scattered in around a number of places. Again, if you're interested in any of these, you can look them up and find out. They're an international sending agency of evangelical tradition. Established churches, evangelism, support national churches. Medicine, Bible translation, literature, also agriculture. I know some of their missionaries, and they do many more things than are listed on here. In fact, a young fellow that I was privileged to work with, who was here at the Glen several years ago, four or five of us got in a Bible study, you know, tried to really to launch a personal ministry here at the Glen. Is now a missionary with OMF. In fact, that four or five of those guys ended up overseas. That was a special joy. But that OMF, they're really an outstanding organization. Now, J. Oswald Sanders is their, I guess, the president or equivalent. I don't remember his title. But we, the navigators, and we invite him to come in regularly to instruct us. He is he really is a man deep in the Word. He's got great experiences. Very, very wise man. And we've had him here. For example, some of our key leaders, our international leadership team, we've had him come in and spend time with us for a week, watch us and observe us to see what we do and how we do it, and then give us constructive feedback, as well as teach us. So we've got a pretty strong tie with them, a number of navigators. I would say all of the above, but Sudan Interior Mission, Africa Inland Mission. In fact, the AIM, I think their personnel director was for years with the NAV, so those three particularly. We've had some people with the CAM, but not as many as the other three. Wycliffe Bible Translators, a non-denominational international parent organization for 18 national sending agencies, involved in Bible translation, aviation, training, literacy, linguistics, affiliated with the Summer Institute of Linguistics and JARS, Jungle Aviation and Radio Service. And, of course, they have Wycliffe Associates, and their associates then are the ones who are in support activities. They have teachers and administrators and secretaries. In fact, a dear lady that was in a Sunday school class that I taught back in Tennessee years ago, has been with Wycliffe for years, and she went on one of their 90-day summer missions, so-called short term, to a place out in the Pacific, and just loved it, so she's still with them. And that short term wasn't quite so short. She's probably been that time about eight or 9 years. But Wycliffe, we frequently have invited Wycliffe into some of our conferences to recruit people. In other words, to recruit our people. I say ours, that's a bad word. Recruit the people that were with us at the time. Because we feel so strongly about that group. The previous director, George Cowan, I know his daughter. His daughter was in our ministry in Knoxville, at least related. She was primarily with Campus Crusade. I saw her some years ago, and she said, I guess you know that Doss Trotman discipled my daddy. And I said, no, I didn't really know that. I knew he had a close tie. He was best man at George Cowan's wedding. That I knew. But I didn't know that the family considered that Doss had discipled him. So that's we've got a strong tie with that group. Really, if you face up to what we're committed to do, the navigators, to make disciples and multiply them, and reach the world, we're going to really need Wycliffe. If we can't get the Bible in the language that people can understand, so you could see, we could have an ulterior motive, but I think it's a genuine motive. That, you know, the principle called Other Works, there used to be in an illustration called the Big Dipper, one of the stars in there was Other Works, meaning that we're not the only ones, and your church is not the only church, and it is a Christian unity issue, and our plan would be to raise up disciples and disciple makers for them to go throughout the world. Isn't that a good plan? I think we were a little sharper with that in the earlier days. I'm not sure that that star on the Big Dipper is quite as sharp as it was years ago. People used to do things like call up Dawson Trotman or Lawrence Annie even and say, look, we'd like 10 men to do thus and so. We still do some of that, but it was more prominent days gone by. That may not be true that it's gone by the board, because in the last X months, I've gotten a letter from Africa Inland Mission asking for us to send some navigator trained people in the Rift Valley. They were asking for four, had them very carefully described. Of course, there are various denominations, boards, and mission boards of many kinds, and depending, some of them focus on a group. For example, Compassion International focuses primarily on children. There's Star Ranch out here with, the international students work. And it goes on. Now, like I said, there's hundreds of them in there. I just wanted you to have a sample of some opportunities to serve, because I think that it really is important. Now, there's different requirements for doing some of these, for serving with these different groups. Some mission groups require that you have a seminary degree, have graduated. Others require that you have either a seminary or a Bible school degree. You have to go to there, finish that particular course of training. SIM requires that you have at least 1 year of Bible school. And I think that Wycliffe does that, or at least 1 year of Bible school. Some of them require that you have specialized training. For example, we talked about JARS, Jungle Aviation Radio Service, the aviation arm of Wycliffe. Then, of course, the skill there is the pilot or a radio repairman or a mechanic or whatever. And there are some professional requirements. Organizationally, at least I can speak for the Missionary Associates Program. I've got three grown daughters of my own, so I'm real sensitive about single women. And I guess I feel kind of fatherly about the whole issue. That I would like to see that there is a fellowship group, that there's someone who will take some spiritual leadership responsibility for the single woman. And if at all possible, I'd like for there to be some more single women. There's something about teaming up single women. Now, and some places in Africa, we have a hard time just getting one in. But in Japan, the place is wide open. And the approach we take there is we try to team up women in apartment living situations, and they'll have a leader, frequently a woman leader, and that has really worked out well. A kind of a common scenario is to match two missionary associates with two Japanese single women. And we have an apartment of four, but we team an American with a Japanese and an American with a Japanese. That's the way our leaders in Japan have chosen to do it. We're not saying that's right, but they feel that's best. And what that does is give cross-cultural help and training, and then the MA can share all their breadth of experiences and so forth. And it helps reduce the loneliness. Then we have special meetings and special conferences for the people that way. And of course now, Africa and Japan are two places where women get a pretty fair deal. There are some places in the world that the concept of women's lib, for example, in Saudi Arabia, they don't have a word for it because they never thought of it. I mean, talk about women being subject back in the Dark Ages. That is just fearful. But there's a wide range from Saudi on into Africa where, like in Ghana, you said women, well, they're respected, can do a wide range of things, can have very effective ministries. You don't have to have permission to go here and there, and you don't have to have somebody go and pave the way for you like you do in some countries.
Yes, most of the women that you work with, married, are you working with any single women? I mean, the natives.
It's primarily single women that I minister to.
Then you do have an avenue of fellowship and with them.
Definitely. Yeah. And that's what has been exciting for me. I haven't minded living alone because God has given me such deep friendships with the Ghanaian women. Yes, so I cry with them and laugh with them. It's not like having a ministry and then I need to find my friendships. They're my friends.
Yeah, and there's something about two really are better than one. The three-strand cord is hard to break. Five of you will chase 100. We've suddenly taken the offense. We've gone from getting killed and laying flat and not getting up to taking the five of you will chase 100, and 100 of you will put 10,000 to flight. There's something about teaming up, getting the broad base of fellowship, and working together. It's not one plus one is equal a lot more than two. And then if you get five, they can handle 20-1 odds. I mean, we take the offense. It's a good plan. It's a good idea, even if it wasn't biblical. But it's biblical. If you were to describe some needs in Ghana, how would you describe just one or two very prominent needs that you might have identified while you were there?
Well, I think just the organizations, Bill, you've mentioned, you know, Wycliffe, SIM, Navigators, and my roommate taught at a government school, so there's opening there. I think what my director says, he's looking for Girl Scout and Boy Scout rough and tough types that are willing to take their showers with just 3 gallons of water and who are willing to kind of live on rice maybe 4 days out of the week with a variety elsewhere. Just kind of being willing to rough it and not expect you're going to find your Hilton hotel there. So I think it's more the attitude, because the opportunities in Ghana are fantastic, all the way from administrative works to on-the-field ministry. And so like Bill and I were talking, there's a need right now for a single woman to come and teach in a secondary school down at Cape Coast, about 2 hours from me, and link up with the Navigators down there and have a ministry among the secondary school women. We find it very beneficial to reach them at the secondary school level so that when they come to the 3-year university program, they can link right up and have an outreach right then. And also to be a companion to Sue Crompton. She has, for the last 4 years, been literally on her own. She hasn't had any other women fellowship. And so she's a 4-year-old, a 2-year-old, and a baby. And maybe in the course of a whole week, she'll see 4 or 5 other white faces and not even know them. Maybe they work for the embassy or something. And because she's so housebound, she hasn't been able to meet a lot of Ghanaian women.
And that's a very specific need, because it just came into my office this morning. Crompton has asked for a missionary associate teacher, math, religion, religious studies, or English. There are jobs apparently in those three fields. And of course the needs are there. They were asking for two people really. So there are needs. And if you have a skill or a professional background of some type, there are probably opportunities for you. You may say, well, I don't have any of those. Well, is English your national language? Some of us speak a little different language. But if English your national language, and if it is, then there are jobs that are available in places like Japan to teach conversational English to Japanese who already speak some English. It doesn't require a degree, It does, if you have a degree, it doesn't require one in English. I mean, that's pretty simple set, professionally, a simple set of qualifications. Parallel in Korea. I just opened up a document this morning and there were some jobs listed in Korea. There's the whole organization that's set up to do nothing but try to help people who want to teach English find the jobs. They're so prominent. Yes, ma'am.
What do you do? Online, you have to have a passport everywhere you go, but every country doesn't require a visa today. And then there's some countries that you have to prove that you're going back home again within a certain length of time. Where do you get all that kind of information?
Well, we have to take them country at a time because most of the countries will have their own specific set of requirements. By and large, there is a generality. The generality is that in many nations, Americans are not that welcome. And they only want you to stay a matter of X days. I was reading this morning that in Thailand it's only 15 days and then you have to have a visa. Then that's a tourist visa. Now if you're going to stay longer than 45 days, you have to have a residence visa. Now how do you get a residence visa? You have to have a job. Or in some countries, if they're open, they'll give you a missionary residence visa. So the countries that are open, then our staff can get a missionary visa for X years, 2, 3, 4 years. But if you're going as to work in some other area, then you would need a job. And once you get the job, the letter that verifies your job gets you the visa.
Now, where do you get that information?
You're probably going to have to try an embassy at a time. But if you were interested in going with us, wherever we are, we could put you in touch with the people who are already there who can tell you that information. Some of it I know. For example, if you wanted to go to Japan and teach English, you could go on a visitor's visa. That's 45 days. Then you go there and be involved with our team. Then they give you some orientation and help you find the job. And as soon as you get the job, the employer gives you a letter attesting that he wants to hire you. Then you have to take that letter and make a short round-trip flight over to Korea. They won't let you. They won't give you the residence visa in country. You have to go to some other country. So we go to Korea. We've got teams right there in Seoul. You go to their embassy with that letter, and they give you and your passport. And then they put the residence visa on, and then you come back and you're set. And as long as you have the job, then you, some countries will give you the visa as long as you have the job. Most of them have a renewal process. We have that here in the U.S. If you're from another country and you came, Joanne Cianini just went through all the hassle, even from Canada, you know, trying to get her work visa for another year.
Well, I'm going to go to Zimbabwe with Louis in February.
Oh, fantastic.
But I haven't any idea how long I can stay.
Well, okay, I think we can find out some. Are you going as a tourist or are you going to move there?
No, I'm not going to move there. I don't know how long I'm going to stay.
Okay, I can give you a telephone. If you'll see me afterwards, okay. I can put you in touch with somebody who can tell you.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I know from personal experience that
where were you?
Jar.
Where were you, though?
North Carolina. Well, we just stayed in North Carolina. And the people who I replaced went to Paul Vaughan.
That's true. Broad range of skills and background. And if not with us, with somebody. Mm-hmm. If you've got something that you've been trained to do, somebody said, well, I'm only a homemaker. I don't like to hear it said that way. That's a tremendous calling to be a homemaker. I find it in the Bible profusely stated. I'm a firm believer in it. And then there are things like the house mother, many, many places. There's even a couple of places in Hawaii. That's hard to call that overseas. It's a hardship assignment. Well, I thought that you might like to take a few minutes and let's briefly describe the Missionary Associates program. Again, broad range of possibilities for you to serve. The primary requirement to be an MA is that you be a NAV-type disciple maker. That somewhere there's at least one person who's living the life of a disciple, primarily through your influence, your life and testimony. You don't have to lead them to Christ and take them all the way. But we do require you to have been involved in evangelism, but to somebody that is a Christian, to take them, help them to grow to become a mature Christian that we call a disciple. And that would make you then a disciple maker. Now, the idea is that we would like people with these characteristics, I'm sorry, with this professional competency to do something, to get a job, whether you get it through your college degree or some skill that you have, whatever way you can get in, then we let that be the source for getting the visa. Now, in your case, I really think that you can probably get a visitor's visa, and my anticipation is going to be real simple to do.
But when to stay a couple of months, you said a while ago, you open to the Lord whatever he tells you, you know, and I don't know when.
Well, now, I can tell you the man who can tell you, and also there is a process to speed it up, to get that in much more quickly than some people are telling you. So we'll need to talk. But I'm just going to say that to get a visa to get in, and then job would be used for two purposes. One, to get that visa, and secondly, for a source of income. Now, there's some places that the job will simply not pay enough. For example, Ghana, that the job at the school that we were both talking about, the salary is not sufficient to live on. They do give you housing, which is a two-bedroom house. So the anticipation is that the missionary in this letter, the missionary associate would get the job and get the quarters, which, again, a very important factor to get a house to live in. And then the women's staff that they're asking for would hopefully move into the house that the MA is given because it goes with the job. You see, there's an advantage of being certain jobs carry certain benefits with it. It will also give the MA medical coverage and vacation time and things like that. That all goes with it. And they'll have to raise some several hundred dollars a month supplementary salary. That particular job also has an airplane ticket with it. So you see, depending on the job you can get and where you go, the job would be to get a visa and to get some income. I think there's some other purposes for the job. One is to get credibility in the community. All my life, I considered that the word missionary was a positive word. I imagine most of you have felt that way. It was a shock to me to realize that most of the world considers that a negative word. And some countries, very negative word. So negative that 47 of them have denied entry. There are 47 countries that won't let a missionary in. If you apply for a missionary visa, you'll be denied. And some of those now, I say, are closed. They'll select, if you're going to run a hospital and pay for all of the services, then they may let some doctors in, but they're not really opening the doors. They're considered closed. And some pretty prominent countries that we know about, for example, Denmark closed about 36 months ago. No more foreign missionaries allowed in Denmark. And even though New Zealand is open, I put quotes around that. It is very, very difficult for us to get a staff visa for New Zealand. And yet I found a new job this morning teaching at a university that they're advertising for some people here to go there. So there are ways to get in, but it gives you credibility and helps overcome the stigma of being a quote, missionary. Now, the places that it's not a problem, then no question about that. But the places that it's a negative term, then if you offer some service, you'll also be easier to explain your presence. Why? What do you do here? Well, I teach at Amadou Bello University. I noticed Bernie Dodd gave that answer at Zaria, and nobody said anything after that, except maybe, well, what do you teach? He said chemistry, and that was the end of that discussion. They also felt that he was there to do them some significant service. Another thing he was able to get out of was some of the negative overlap and feedback that some of our missionaries get because we do try to get our missionaries a decent place to live, you know, with flush toilets and running water and electricity. There are some places that don't qualify for that.
Some missionaries don't qualify.
We try. It's not always a success factor. But you see, if you wanted to live in a place like that, do you know what they gave Bernie Dunn? In addition to a salary and a ticket and medical coverage and 6 weeks vacation a year and a ticket round trip to go anywhere he wanted to with that. They gave him a 3-bedroom house that had all those facilities in it. And he didn't have to explain what he was doing having all those nice things. You see, sometimes the way I found this out, I've been asking, and I got a lot of the messages from our African friends, some of our Africans who come over here. I asked the question to tell me, now I'm going to mention a word and you tell me, is it positive or negative? And I say missionary. and I get some reluctance every time to answer. Then I have to encourage, well, just tell me, is it more positive or more negative? Did you know I've not found an exception? Every foreign national that I've asked has told me that it's more negative than positive in their minds. And this includes Anglo countries as well as African and Asian countries. I know there's some that it's got to be positive, but so far I haven't run into it. And one guy said, well, bless his heart, he's such a sensitive man. He's from Zaire. And he said, well, I personally feel that it's positive, he said, but to be honest, the Zaireans don't. And then I say, would you tell me why? Well, you know, the ugly American. We've been prominent around the world. Secondly, the colonial implications, especially if the British had been there. Another thing is that we've come in with the idea of paternalism and treat the nationals like natives, more like little children. We're not doing that I know of, the navigators, but it's been done in the past. And you can see there's some negatives there. Now, if you do something like teach or you offer some service, then they can see that you're doing something in addition to what the ugly American would normally be doing, because you have a spiritual life and you have a social contribution you're making to the people. So there are some advantages. And if whatever it is, the way you make that contribution, Bernie Dodd had to have 6 hours of counseling a week obligated by the university. And I went by his office and he motioned me in, and he had a young Nigerian in there teaching him how to have a quiet time. That was what he was doing during the counseling era. I thought, that's pretty good. So there are some advantages. Now, most anything that you can think of that you can do can probably some way to get overseas with it. There are over 3 million Americans working overseas. The number is approaching 4 million. And so there are lots of jobs. The shortage is not jobs. What would you guess the shortage is? Laborers for the harvest. That's what the shortage is. There are jobs in Ghana right now. We know about the one that was in the letter. But there are more jobs. Well, it's getting laborers who are willing to go and do it.
How do you find the opportunity?
We have access to agencies that will take your professional background and give you job printouts from various countries. Overseas Counseling Service is one. Global Opportunities is another. You can get some information from Intercristo. But the best way is if you have a place in mind and a specific thing you'd like to do, let's try it on some of our staff that are there or some other missionary associates. For example, if you wanted to teach English in Japan, well, we know how to do that. Depending on where you want to go. If you want to go to the Philippines, then we'd let some of the Filipinos there give us a hand with that. Tell us what they know about job listings. Plus, we follow up on the ones we know about. Then if you can pray you up a round-trip airplane ticket, that's always a possibility. Go over there and look for it. What did you have some specialty in mind?
Well, I work in computers.
Computers. Computer sciences. Right now, if you have 2 years' experience in programming and analysis, whether you have a degree or not, there were 3 jobs, maybe 4 jobs, available at Asia Institute of Technology in Thailand. And I got a letter that almost had tears on it from Herman Jensen, pleading for some help. He says there are 100 students at that school who have already asked to be helped in their growth and follow-up, and he doesn't have anybody to do it. He had 2 ITs whose their tour was up, and they went back. They were Filipino. They went back home. And he was asking, is there anybody who would be willing to come and help? So that's one possibility. There are some jobs in the Middle East, and they're elsewhere. We had one young fellow had a job located in Zimbabwe. He didn't proceed with it, but that was a possibility. And they're scattered all over the world. What you do is, with OCS, for example, they need a resume, a summary of your background and experience, and then some of your personal desires. Where would you like to go? What would you prefer to do? And they put all that in the computer, and they give you a copy to print out. And they've got a staff that's working to locate jobs around the world. Well, in the MA program, we do want you to be in a team involvement where there would be some leadership available, if at all possible. And we would prefer that there be other women and that you would not be alone. How long can you stay? As long as you and the Lord and our country leader are in agreement, then that's fine with me. I really think that less than 1 year is going to be questionable to make disciples and multiply them. It takes you about a year to really get adjusted and begin to put together a group of people so that you'd have an ongoing work. I think 2 years is a more realistic term for, and then a lot of people, a lot of contracts are 2 years, and then they're renewable. So we've had people that went on a 2-year contract and then renewed them and renewed them again and renewed them. Now for the third time, we've got some people going on 8 years, having done just that. What's open? Well, the best way to find out what's open is to borrow your NAV staff international mailing list to see where we are. And if we're not there, then maybe if you can recruit somebody to go with you, try that one on for size. That's particularly true in Africa now. Mike Trenier, the Africa director, is of the opinion that we can launch new ministries with missionary associates. Well, we know that we can because we've already done it. We've had a young man in Liberia. We had two or three fellows do excellent work there in Nigeria, Alan Chestnut and guys like that. Now, some of you may know Scott and Ruth Sprague. He's just every bit as old as I am. They've kind of retired, if that's a good word. Their kids are out, and he's a teacher. So he's gone to Tanzania and begun to work there. He's very experienced in doing NAV ministry. He helped me in my early days. And so it wouldn't surprise you that they have a blossoming ministry. He's already taken a whole gang of those guys out from Tanzania and cross the border into Kenya to go to a conference up there. And that's the way that's going. So wherever we are, that's open. And then wherever you would like to go, there's a possibility if we can work something out. And if we're not there, if you wanted to go to Monrovia, Liberia, for example, I would probably be open for that because SIM has 60 missionaries there. That's radio station Elwa. And with all that many SIMers, you'd have lots of people you could relate to. But I would be very reluctant for you just to pick out a spot on the map and say, I want to go there, and there's nobody there that I know of. And I'd be uneasy about that. Unless I could see some way for you to get some help in your life, somebody for you to relate to, some fellowship, some inputs to your life, I'd probably say to count me out. If you want to do it, I might give you all the information I have, but I'm not sure I really want to be a party to that. Maybe you could, if it's written on the wall now, you know, the handwriting, well, never mind. But I'm not one to say that it isn't, that God's not calling you. I don't want to be that presumptive. I don't want to play God. I'm just saying that that's not what's on my heart. So I would never say, if you say, God told me to go to Timbuktu, I say, well, I've got a little information. I know it's in West Africa, not Mali, Upper Volta, in that general area. I know how to find it on the map. And I could find some other mission groups to give you information. That's about as far as I go with it. We're not there. And I wouldn't be that keen for a missionary associate to go there by themselves. If you said you want to go and there's three other people who want to go, well, we might talk about that. Who the people are, and is there someone there that might could take a leadership role? I'm saying the whole world really is open. But we don't want you to try to do that by yourself. I don't find jobs for you, but I sure help. I'll give you some suggestions of addresses and telephone numbers or whatever for you to follow through with. I just dictated a real long letter this morning to a Canadian couple. I gave them about 5 or 6 addresses for them to follow through with. And my guess is they're going to get 3 or 4 yes answers because he is pretty keen professional. I've already talked about the teaching English. We have almost any of the profession, but English is the most prominent job available. Now, if you have a degree in some field, but you'd like to teach at the university level, if you have a baccalaureate, you'd probably need to consider getting a master's if you want to teach at the university level. That's probably the best functional thing we found to do. It's 15 to 18 hours a week in the classroom. That carries high prestige with it most places. Instant acceptance and credibility. Now, if you say, well, in my field, it'd take me 3 years to get a master's degree. I said, well, if you're thinking about English, I've got a list of 22 major universities in the U.S. where you can get a master's degree in English with no thesis and 12 calendar months is all it takes. And places like University of Texas at Austin, Arizona and Arizona State, Northern Arizona. So there's some prominent schools where you don't have to have a major in English to do that. It can be home ec or music or engineering. And if you are interested, you can get a master's degree in 12 calendar months and no thesis. In accounting, yeah, there are quite a number of accounting jobs listed by different agencies. There are a number of American firms that need American accountants. Now, see, not everybody uses our system. There are jobs available. Many of the mission groups, again, in the support area, administration, they would probably include things like some accounting and administration. It would probably be a little broader than accounting for some of them. And if you have a CPA, have you gone for the CPA? Okay, well, if you get, there's something about the CPA that's an unusual door opener. And jobs seem to flock to that. It's magnetic. Now, if you get an MBA, that'll qualify you to teach at the university level. But there's some universities that will give you a faculty position with a CPA and only a baccalaureate. It's a little hard to explain. I'm not sure I understand it. I just tried to recognize what I observed. Any questions you'd like to ask now about the MA program or anything we've talked about for that matter? Did you see that little list of characteristics on page 2? Now, don't let that throw you. The question is, are you more that way than not that way? I talked to a young... Yeah, but see, are you more like that? Are you more loving than not loving? We're not asking you to be 100%. A young rep laid that on me several years ago. He said, I only want men who are 100% committed. I said, well, you sure left me out. I've heard Lawrence Annie's testimony. You probably left him out. And I've read Doss, and if Betty reported that correctly, you probably left Doss out. It may be you and Jesus. I'm not sure who else is left. We're not talking about 100%. We're talking about are you more that way. Now, there's a couple of things that are limiting. One of them is adaptability. If you're just not an adaptable person, that'll eat your lunch overseas. You're not going to make it unless you learn how to become adaptable. Another is if you are an authoritarian, dominating personality. That's the ugly American syndrome, and that's a wipeout. You either have to, you guarantee two options, guaranteed failure, or you have a supernatural lifestyle change, and I'd prefer to see that here before going. But do you generally get along with people? You don't have to have all these, but is that a fair description of you? The adaptable and authoritarian are two that we figure are limiters. Any questions now you'd like to ask?
Maybe just one comment on this list. What I've done with this type of list in a period of my life in Ghana was turn it into a prayer. So my list had 7, so I just did one quality per day and just prayed about that. Hmm. So you may want to just make it a prayer for your own life.
Now, we had one young, delightful young woman that was a first-class authoritarian. She was a supervisory nurse, not saying that all supervisory nurses are, but somehow she got in the back of her mind the scenario that supervisory nurses had to be like first sergeants in the Army. And that's how she ran a tight ship. I mean, it was shape up or ship out, and she had, you know, she'd get... she'd have meetings in order to tell them what to do. She didn't want to look for two-way communication. But that all came out. She was well qualified otherwise. And I had a little discussion with her about that. And she said it had been pointed out to her by two different people that she was that way. And then I said, well, did anybody ever offer you a plan on how to work at that? So let's do something about it. She said, well, no, they haven't. They just told you you're too authoritative. Quit being that way. She said, yeah. And I said, that ain't going to work. She said, well, it hasn't worked so far. I said, well, why don't we develop a plan? So we sat there about an hour and a half. We talked to her, very specific, concrete suggestions. And when she got ready to leave my office, she says, I want you to know this has been a great encouragement to me. Then I recruited a rep. I called him on the phone. I said, look, she wants to work at this. Will you help her? Here's some things I think would be good for you to help her with. And I said, and then give me a call when it looks like she's getting it shaped up. I think she can handle it. About 9 or 10 months, he said, well, she's ready. And she went overseas, done a magnificent job. In fact, we changed her status to staff status. I'm not going to say any names because she's really learned. So see, she's talking about pray through those. Even if you have them in your life, those are good for everybody. But is that generally you? Quieter, a little more laid back, less assertive, less dominating, a learner. You'll listen to other people and learn from them. You don't have all the answers. You're not over there to shape everybody up. You know, is that kind of the attitude, the plotter Sandy talked about? If that's you, you probably match that pretty well. If you're not sure, why don't you, some of you, Is this all single women here or some married? Some married. Ask your spouse about that. That'd give me pretty good feedback. Some of you may have children. They can tell you some of those things. Ask other people. Then they can give you a little feedback. And that's what we're asking. Somebody that's going to make it that way with the characteristics, as opposed to starting off in a tough situation. Well, why don't we commit these things to prayer, and then I'll linger a little while anyway. And could you just stay around another few minutes? Or you got to go directly to...
Actually, I have a woman coming.
Okay, so I'll linger then if you want to ask me some
more.
Okay, you can get some time with Linda maybe another time. Lord, we thank you and praise you that you love us the way that you do, the way that you've proven yourself so many ways, especially by giving your Son for us. Lord, it's a bit awing when we recognize that you've given to us the privileges and responsibilities that even angels in heaven don't have, that we're to go and give the gospel to every creature, everywhere in this world, to all nations to disciple them. That's an overwhelming commission, Lord, and we recognize it's not a great suggestion. It's really a great commission that you meant it when you told us, and that we as your children are obligated to respond to you. Lord, I would ask that from this group, that if there's some you've already selected to go and serve overseas in whatever capacity, I pray that you'd reveal that to them, that they'll not be able to get it out of their minds, that you'll continue to give them inputs and clarify it for them, let them know what to do, when to do, where to do. And Lord, I would ask from this group that you will raise up the foundations of many generations, people who will truly be repairers of the breach, that people here can serve in various ways in countries of your choosing. And Lord, in closing, I would ask that you would lift a promise you gave your Israelite children and apply it to us when you said, I will have respect unto you and make you fruitful and multiply you and establish my covenant with you. And Lord, as you work in us and through us, please cause us to be careful to thank you and praise you. In Jesus' name, amen.